Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and now it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. The Boston Celtics are currently the favorite at plus 160, but the team that's third in my championship rankings, the Dallas Mavericks, you can get them on DraftKings right now at plus 1600 to win the title. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Saturday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible weekend. Well, it turns out the Los Angeles Lakers are, in fact, capable of occasionally, if rarely, beating the Denver Nuggets as they extend the series to 5, which Game 5 will be on Monday night. We'll be going live on YouTube after the final buzzer of that one. I had a thing last night that kind of got in the way of my routine typically in the playoffs, so I had to cover those three games today, which got in the way of my ability of covering the other games. So we're just going to hit Nuggets-Lakers and then Pelicans-Thunder today. So we're going to have to get to those other two series at a later date. Obviously, we've got a jam-packed schedule tomorrow as well. So Nuggets, Lakers, Pelicans, Thunder for tonight's show. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel so you don't miss any more of our videos. Follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT so you guys don't miss any show announcements. Don't forget about our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight. And then keep leaving mailbag questions in the YouTube comments so we can keep hitting a couple mailbags a week over the course of the rest of the playoffs. All right, let's talk some basketball. So I'm going to kind of mix things up a little bit in this episode. Instead of going kind of into the weeds, I'm going to start kind of big picture first. As a fan, as someone who obviously is rooting for the Los Angeles Lakers, I was proud of their effort tonight. These game fours, when you're down 3-0, they typically go the route of the sweep. I did some digging. It's hard to find some exact data, but it looks like in NBA history, a team down 3-0 loses that game about 69% of the time. They win about 30-31% of the time. So typically what ends up happening is the better team, who demonstrated they were better by going up 3-0, is able to close the deal, right? So and part of that is not just the talent differential, it's a lack of belief, right? So like when you lose two games on the road, especially as the underdog, when you come home for game three, you have this thought in the back of your mind, and it's they held serve, right? It's like they did what they were supposed to do. There's all these cliches that surround it. You may have heard the series doesn't start until someone wins on the road, right? Like there's all these cliches. So you go into game three with a certain amount of belief, like we still can do this, right? It's not until you drop that third game that it's like, oh, actually we can't, you know? And then typically that leads to kind of a cascading effect, because if the team's better than you, you have to be perfect to beat them, right? In your game plan execution, you need role players to hit shots. You need a bunch of different variables to go your way in order to beat a team that's better than you, right? And so like there's a certain level of focus and belief you need to do that typically. And so that's why in game four, it typically goes the other direction. And so I just want to shout out the Los Angeles Lakers for showing some pride, showing some fight, and extending this series. I now to kind of tilt that back towards Denver. Denver is going to approach game five on Monday like a must win. They do not want to come back to the crypto.com arena for a game six, right? Now, if they did have to do that, they would still rightfully be favored to win that game six, right? But they're going to try to close this thing out in five. It's not just about avoiding a road game six that if the Lakers win can force a game seven. It's also about Minnesota. Minnesota is probably going to close Phoenix out tomorrow, if not in game five, right? So Minnesota is going to be ready and waiting for you in round two. So Denver's going to want to get this thing over with quickly. And so here's the thing, like, I'm not going to sit here and act like Denver hasn't been trying in this series. I do think that they gave a relatively poor effort in the first half tonight, which is like to be expected. But for the most part in this series, they've been kind of humming it around, you know, they're 85-90%, like that typical, like engaged, but not desperate type of effort from Denver. I think we're going to get like just a freight train Denver performance on Monday. It's going to be a really difficult game for the Lakers to stay competitive in, let alone to win. So I'll be picking Denver to win on Monday. I think they're going to win convincingly. I wouldn't be surprised if they won by double figures. That's just how much I believe in this Nuggets team, especially with urgency behind them in game five. That said, I just wanted to compliment the Los Angeles Lakers again. Like, just most teams let go of the rope entirely in game four. That was not the case tonight. They showed a wire-to-wire, really, really impressive performance. The big one is when Denver came with their inevitable second half run that they always come with, right? When that run happened, the Lakers responded. They were able to hold up underneath that onslaught in a way they were not able to in the first three games. So from there, now let's get into the basketball. So how did the Lakers get it done? First, which I thought was interesting in the first quarter, they ran a lot of their early offense through Austin Reeves. And this is something that I actually called for a lot at the beginning of the series, and they didn't do very much. And it's something I'd like to see them do more in game five. They didn't even really do it that much after the first quarter. They went to him a couple times at the end of the fourth quarter and he came through. But in that first quarter in particular, they were heavy attacking with Austin Reeves. Why does that matter? Because with the way that Denver has their defensive matchups configured, right, for the most part in this series, with the exception of that run in game two and a handful of other possessions here and there, they've had Jokic on AD, Gordon on LeBron, right? Those are your physical matchups that make sense in the front court. Then they're putting KCP on D'Angelo Russell because they know, even though we've discussed this on the show before, Austin, because his floor is higher than D'Lo's and because he's more versatile, probably a better basketball player than D'Lo, right? But D'Lo has this really high ceiling. Like, if you let D'Lo get going, he can really get going, which, by the way, to his credit, big bounce back game tonight, hit four threes, 21 points, really nice game from D'Angelo Russell. That ceiling that D'Lo has, Denver wants to avoid that as much as possible. And so they're going to go with KCP on him as much as possible to try to mitigate his particular advantage. That slots Jamal Murray onto Austin Reeves. And they just think in general, like, Austin's a guy that's going to run some action. He's going to have some success, but he's not going to torch us for 30, 35 points. That's the way that Denver's looking at it, right? Well, again, that's a way for you to go at a specific advantage in the matchups by keeping Jamal in the action. Again, one of the most important parts of getting a defense in rotation and pick and roll is getting the guard in trail position. And it's a difficult thing to do against really good screen defenders. That was a big thing at the end of game two. If you guys remember, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was navigating screens really well with LeBron and stopping him from turning the corner as cleanly as he was when Aaron Gordon was on the ball, right? And they were bringing Jokic up to the screen with Anthony Davis, right? And so going from KCP, this like awesome screen navigator, is one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. By the way, he's going to have a hell of a challenge on his hands after if they win game five, or if they get out of the series and they face Minnesota in the next round, he's going to have a hell of a challenge on his hands with Anthony Edwards, as we all know. But like going from him to Jamal Murray, even though Jamal Murray has done a good job as a team defender, he's kind of like a defensive playmaker is what I look at him as. Like, he's not necessarily great at any specific thing, but he's got good instincts and he can jump passing lanes, smart help. He does things like that to like make plays on defense. Famously, if you guys remember, he had a big play like that at the end of game four last year that actually led to the sweep when he tied up LeBron James on that drive, if you guys remember. But in general, Jamal Murray is not a fantastic screen navigator. He's not a guy that's going to lock up a perimeter player, right? So getting Austin Reaves into those ball screens, he's able to get Jamal into trail position, which gets him going downhill, which actually collapses the defense, which creates all the openings that can get the defense in rotation. I thought that was a big part of the early offensive success that the Lakers had. And like I said, I'd like to see them do more of that in game five. LeBron James, full desperation mode. We all know that LeBron, we've seen this time and time again. He did this in a big way in game six against the Warriors last year. It's like back against the wall. I know I can't do this all the time because I'm too old, but I can just bully people. And he was constantly attacking mismatches against the smaller Denver players and taking them down into the post. And again, it was all right at the rim or short turnaround jumpers, short those mid-range jumpers. Again, we talk about this a lot, but like mid-range jumpers inside of 12, 13 feet tend to be a much higher percentage than in that 15 to 18 feet area, right? LeBron did a lot of work in there. He was awesome. He ended up with 30 points in this game. He's really been, with exception of the defensive end in game two, and he had a kind of uneven offensive game, or excuse me, game three, I should say. Game three was a rough one for LeBron. But for the most part, through four games, he's been really, really good and a hell of a lot better than he was last year. So shout out to LeBron. D'Lo, big bounce back game. Again, it's not about his ceiling. We know what D'Lo's ceiling is. It's his floor that has made him such a frustrating player. To his credit, this is the eighth big game in a row for the Lakers, right? The Warriors game, the Timberwolves game, the Pelicans game again, and then four Nuggets games. And he was really bad against Golden State, really bad against Minnesota, really good against the Pelicans, good against the Pelicans again, and then he's been good in two of the four Denver games, right? That's the rub on D'Lo is it's a back and forth thing. It's like you're getting feast or famine with him. And when he's not hitting shots, he doesn't do enough else to impact the game. But there's no doubt that his ceiling is very important, especially to this particular Lakers team. It's been a big part of their offensive surge that they've had over the last 46 games or so of the season since the beginning of January. And so shout out to D'Lo for the bounce back. Again, it's been a frustrating experience rooting for him over the course of the last couple of playoff runs. But there's no doubt that the highs are really, really high with D'Lo. But we got to make our way to Anthony Davis. I talked before the series, if you guys remember, that I was really disappointed with Anthony Davis in the playoff series last year against Jokic. I actually specifically said in the series preview that I have high expectations for Anthony Davis in this series. Why? Because Jokic is his peer, right? Like when you're lumping in all these players, right? You look at LeBron, it's like you're ranking him against like Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, Kawhi Leonard, right? Like you're looking at him with that group of guys. When you're looking at Anthony Davis, you're looking at him with Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, right? Maybe you lump Giannis in there depending on who you ask, right? But like over the course of the last few years, Jokic and Embiid have kind of won that battle over the course of the regular seasons. And a lot of that was had to do with health. But then over the tail end of last year, AD went on this crazy defensive run. And I was really advocating for him going into that series last year as an opportunity for him to kind of put his stamp on everything. And he was pretty good in game one, struggled to start the game, but scored a bunch of points in ball screens. And then he was just not very good in the last three games of the series and got his butt kicked by Nikola Jokic. And specifically in game four last year, I thought he let go of the rope. And quit's a hard word to use, but I thought he stopped really, truly giving the urgent and desperate effort. And so I was disappointed because, like, LeBron was on a bad foot and he was getting outplayed by Jamal Murray. And AD was the guy who kind of like needed to carry the weight and he struggled. And so that's why I kind of said coming into this series that I was really hoping for a dominant Anthony Davis performance. And he has been incredible. Specifically in the series preview, I said he needed to close the gap. AD's not better than Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic is playing at a level that is dominant compared to other all-time greats, let alone the rest of the league right now. I think there's like a significant distance between him and the second best player in the league. So like, you're not asking AD to be better than Jokic, but he needed to close the gap. And he has done that in a really, really significant way in this series. Really controlled the glass tonight. That was the story of the game. The Lakers actually won the battle, the rebounding battle. I think it was 46 to 40. Yeah, 46 to 40 in rebounds, and they held up on the offensive glass better. They had 8 offensive rebounds. They allowed 9 to Denver. AD actually finished the game with 23 rebounds, 25 points, 23 rebounds, and 6 assists with 1 turnover. He has been the steady force for the Lakers in this series. He's done a lot of damage in one-on-one to Nikola Jokic. If you remember last year, the AD ISOs and post-ups against Jokic were so bad that the Lakers had to bail on him. I want to say, I can't remember the exact numbers, but he like missed on his first like 6 tries or something like that. And then the Lakers just bailed on it. They were like, you can't score on Jokic one-on-one. We can't go to that anymore. It's actually been one of the most effective plays for the Lakers in this series is going to Anthony Davis against Jokic on the low block. And so I just like, who knows where the Lakers will go from here after the season. Again, I still think it's an incredibly small chance that the Lakers somehow come back and win the series. Hell, it never has happened before in NBA history, right? But like moving forward from this series, like Anthony Davis has answered the call. He's been unbelievable. You know, I said coming into this series that LeBron James was playing at the third best level in the league behind Nikola Jokic and Luka Doncic. LeBron hasn't quite lived up to that in this postseason series, although I think LeBron's been very good. But Anthony Davis has outplayed him in this series. Anthony Davis has been one of the 5 best playoff players to start this playoff run around the NBA. And I just can't say enough about how incredible he's been in this series. He has answered the call. It is not his fault that the Lakers are in the position that they're in.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying 4th season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I want to shout out the Lakers for weathering that Denver run. Again, that was just inevitably going to come in the third quarter, and they did. And I think they got it down to 7 at one point, but they never let it get any closer than that. On the defensive end, just more doubling of Jokic. That was a big one in this game. A lot of doubling, really sharp rotations. And Denver's role guys weren't as good, right? Jamal Murray had another poor shooting night. The Lakers have done a really good job on Jamal Murray in this series. But they just in general did a better job defensively all over the floor. And again, that's something you can kind of count on. Like on the road, role players, that is an advantage that typically tilts towards the role players will typically play better when they're at home. And so that didn't quite happen in game 3, happened in a big way in game 4. And then again, controlling the glass. Before we move on from this game, I did want to just shout out Nikola Jokic, because, you know, he has this thing. It kind of reminds me of LeBron when he was in his prime, where like he's basically incapable of playing a bad game. Like, I can't even remember which game it was, but Jokic had a bad game. Was it the Suns game? I can't remember where it was, but it's in the last third of the regular season where he had a bad game. And I remember coming on the show and being like, hey, this is weird. You know, like, Jokic had a bad game, you know? And I remember that was what it was like with LeBron, where, like, I remember it was in the 2017 playoffs in the Eastern Conference Finals. LeBron had, like, literally 10 consecutive dominant games. And then he had a really bad game at home against the Celtics. It was the one where Avery Bradley hit the game winner coming around that curl and like shot that shot off the front of the rim that went in. And then and LeBron was bad. And it was just so bizarre that LeBron was bad. And then he came back in game 5 and like utterly dominated the Celtics as they moved on and went to the NBA Finals, right? And like that's what it kind of reminds me of with Jokic. But even within like the normal scale, right? Like Jokic didn't dominate the game. This game, the way that he is capable of, right? And he had 33 points, 14 rebounds, and 14 assists. That's preposterous, man. That's insane. 33, 14, and 14, and it was like an iffy game for him compared to where his ceiling is typically at. And again, I just can't say enough about, like, again, we are witnessing an all-time great in his upward trajectory. And I hope we don't take it for granted, because like, again, these things end quicker than you think. Not everybody stays in the league as long as LeBron did. You know what I mean? And like, we're in the middle of something really special here from Nikola Jokic, and I'm enjoying every minute of it as a basketball fan. Again, I expect Denver to go home and win convincingly in game 5. I believe they'll win by double figures. But again, if you're the Lakers, this is what you're telling yourself in the locker room. Hey guys, we have been in the lead for the vast majority of this series. I they were shown the stat on the score on the broadcast tonight, but I think the Lakers have led the Nuggets twice as often in the series as the Nuggets have led the Lakers. Doesn't mean the Nuggets are the Lakers are better than the Nuggets. The Nuggets have clearly demonstrated that, but the Lakers have played a lot of good basketball in this series, right? So if you're a Lakers fan, if you're in that Lakers locker room, what you're telling yourself is, we have demonstrated that we can beat these guys. We feel like we should have won game 2. Denver just got crazy hot at the end and beat us, right? And like, maybe Darvin Ham makes a smart challenge call on the Jamal Murray bump, and maybe we get out of there with a win. We've played well enough to beat them twice in the 4 times we've played. All we got to do is go into Denver and beat them once. It is think of it one game at a time. You beat Denver in game 5, then you come home, and that's the buzzsaw game, right? That's the game where it's like, now it's 3-2. We have all the momentum. We're at home. Let's run these dudes out of the gym. Then game 7, anything can happen. If you win, you move on. And you don't have to look any further than LeBron James. He's literally done that before, right? Now, obviously, he was a much better version. That was the best 3-game stretch he's ever played in his career. obviously. So like, it's a lot to ask for an age 39 LeBron. But like, again, there are things to target for optimism if you're a Lakers fan. I just personally think that that Denver has not quite pushed the pedal to the metal all the way yet in this series. I think they will on Monday, and I think it's going to be jarring. I have a feeling we're going to be coming on this broadcast after that game going like, holy shit, the Nuggets went to their ceiling. That was scary. These dudes are going to repeat. Like that's kind of the way I feel like Monday night's going to go. All right, moving on. I wanted to hit Oklahoma City, New Orleans. I didn't have time today just because of what happened last night. I had to hit the other three games this morning, and it just kind of got away from me in terms of time. So I wanted to hit Oklahoma City, New Orleans, because we did hit game two of Miami, Boston, and we did hit game three of Orlando, Cleveland, but we had not yet hit Oklahoma City, New Orleans since game one. We only hit game one. We didn't hit game two. So I wanted to get back to them. And they go up 3-0. They blow out the Pelicans in New Orleans today. This was a big test. I thought the Pels were going to give them some issues. If you guys remember in the series preview, I thought they had some matchup advantages that kind of played into their strengths. And like they did in game one. Game one, they hung around and gave a good fight. But like the Thunder have dominated this series since then, and they have passed that test with flying colors. And Oklahoma City's defense has been the story of that first round matchup. They have a 94.7 defensive rating, which is the best among playoff teams so far in the first round. Again, that means they allow 94.7 points per 100 possessions. They're defending the three-point line really well. They're allowing just 9.4 three-pointers made per game from New Orleans, although New Orleans takes a lot of mid-range jump shots, so that's part of it from process standpoint. But they're doing a good job getting physical up on the ball and taking away easy threes. They're allowing just 28% from three from New Orleans. Big one on the perimeter here is just like, and this is what's so exciting about the future of the Thunder. You know, we talk about Minnesota a lot. Minnesota, one of the big reasons why I like their roster construct, and I've been talking about this for years with Minnesota, but it's like, it's Ant, it's Jaden, it's Rudy, and it's what I call a bracket. And the reason why I refer to it as a bracket is like, in individual defense situations, you got a guy that's pressuring the ball, and then you have this guy that's waiting on the back line, right? So if he gets over a ball screen and my on-ball defender is in pursuit from behind, he's back pressuring while Chet's waiting on the other end. And there is a certain, that bracket gets spread out when it's a lesser perimeter defender and a lesser rim protector, right? And there's just so much more that can be done in that space in between, not to mention the lack of rim protection entirely can allow a guy to get to the rim consistently. But when you have a legitimate rim protector with length that not only can protect the rim, but can also bother shots in floater and mid-range, and you've got a real long defender that can pressure from behind and disrupt the base, that's that where that bracket can get terrifying defensively. And that's what makes, you know, the Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert trio so devastating, right? Well, Oklahoma City kind of has their own version of that. Now, it's a little different. It's less based on length, because Jaden McDaniels is more of a length-based defender. Lou Dort is more of like a fire hydrant, low center of gravity, beat you to spots, disrupt your base, make you shoot over the top kind of guy, right? And he's done just an unbelievable job on Brandon Ingram. Physical ball pressure, chasing him over the top of screens, beating him, literally beating him over the top of screens and cutting him off, disrupting that base. Again, when you're going up against a pull-up shooter, think of it like this. If I'm CJ McCollum or I'm Brandon Ingram and I'm in the summertime, right? You're going through dribble combinations and footwork, and you're kind of building a muscle memory based on a certain level of freedom of movement, right? And then when you get a really good on-ball defender who stays physically attached and messes with all of the movement while you're getting to your spot and disrupts the base, suddenly the muscle memory at the end of that shot doesn't look the same as it does when you're in your shooting drills, right? And like with Dort on Brandon Ingram and Jalen Williams on CJ McCollum, and then they've got guys coming off the bench too, like Hassan Wallace and Aaron Wiggins have both done a really good job. They just have disrupted the perimeter players that initiate everything for New Orleans. And now one thing for New Orleans, obviously without Zion being in the game, it just changes everything, right? Like if Zion's in, Dort's probably guarding him. That moves Jalen Williams over to Brandon Ingram, which is probably going to put Shea on CJ, which is like a better matchup, right? And so like obviously Pelicans fans, I'm aware Zion being out is a significant, you know, factor here. But within the context of this perimeter battle that we're seeing in this series, the Pelicans are just getting their ass kicked. And that's a credit to those Thunder perimeter defenders. But again, the other side of that bracket is Chet. He had four blocks today. He got Trey Murphy driving closeouts twice when he tried to dunk on him and like cleanly blocked him on dunks twice. The first one, like Trey brought it back like this while he was flying down the lane. I honestly, God, don't know how Chet got to it without fouling him. It was an incredible defensive play. He got both CJ and BI in ball screens. And again, that's that bracket on the CJ one. It's like he finally snakes the ball screen and kind of gets over and gets over to his left-hand side, and he just doesn't even see Chet coming, and Chet just spikes it into the ground like a volleyball player, right? Like, it's another layer of that defense that makes it difficult. They are forcing 19 turnovers per game in this series. That's the most among playoff teams. Remember, they led that category in the regular season as well. They're scoring 21 points per game off of turnovers as well. And then on the offensive end of the floor, like Shea, again, this is a lesser opponent, and we're going to get into that in a minute, but Shea has had no slowdown from the regular season, 28 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists per game on 59% true shooting. So just a tiny dip in volume and efficiency, which again, the Pelicans have really good perimeter defenders. Give some credit to Herb Jones, right? And then Jalen Williams, his playoff debut has been awesome. 20.7 rebounds and 5 assists per game, 53% from the field and 42% from three. I am full. I've said this before. Like, I think Jalen's so damn good. I think he could be better than SGA one day. I've said this on the show before, but I look at him as like the best combination of playmaking, downhill force, and pull-up shooting that I've seen from a wing player in a very, very long time. And I am not the least bit surprised that he is just completely kicking ass in the playoffs. There was a stretch in the second quarter today where the Pelicans put Jose Alvarado on him, and he just immediately bullied him twice, once on the post and once on the low post, once on the high post. And they just immediately had to pull him off and put Najee Marshall on him. He hit a couple of these like crazy, like hanging double pump shots in the second quarter, which just are an indicator of just how insane of an athlete he is. And then Josh Giddey had a really rough game one. And obviously all these teams around the league are going to be leaving him open just to give them a better chance of containing elsewhere. And he's been great since struggling in game one. He's been hitting his spot up threes more frequently, had a couple of nice transition pushes today. He had this one against CJ McCollum in the first half where he did this like nice behind the back dribble into a Euro step floater. He had 21 points today. We do here at the volume, we do like a little playoff points league, and Josh Giddey was one of the players I picked, one because I thought the Thunder would win at least the first round. And then also like Josh Giddey is just a guy that's going to get opportunities, and he capitalized on those in a big way today. So I was a little concerned about that pick in game one, but Josh has been making me look good over the last couple of games. But now kind of zooming out a little bit, this is by far the easiest matchup in the West. That goes without saying, right? Like, they're playing the 8 seed without their best player. I was thinking about this earlier, too. They're the only team in the West playoffs without a top 10 player. Like, Oklahoma City has Shea, clearly a top 10 player. Denver is Jokic, clearly a top 10 player. Minnesota, Anthony Edwards, I think he might be a top 10 player now. We might just have, like, he's certainly playing at that level. I mean, whether he can sustain, we'll see, but he's playing at that level. The Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, when he's healthy, obviously a top 10 player, he's out. So I guess, or he's obviously unhealthy. So I guess you can kind of factor that in. But the Mavericks have Luka. That's a top 10 player. The Suns have Kevin Durant. That's a top 10 player. The Lakers have LeBron and Anthony Davis. I think both of them are top 10 players. So like, no, there's just so much talent in the league. We might have to zoom out and actually make a list and see who might get cut from that list. But the point is like when you're talking about stars, like the Pelicans are the one team that just doesn't have that level of firepower, right? So obviously, you have to beat who's in front of you. You earned this matchup by getting the number one seed in the Western Conference. So credit the Thunder for getting that done, right? But I am excited to see round two. And I think they've passed the first round test with flying colors. Round two, whether it's Clippers or Mavs, that's going to be a really, really interesting and exciting series. Running into some real firepower, running into some real like multiple high-level shot creators that are every shot creator on both of those teams better than CJ and Brandon. So it's just going to be an entirely different level that they're going to be going up against. And then much better front lines that they're going to have to deal with. Zubac is just a really, really a much higher level center than a Jonas Valanciunas. Even if you look at some of these small ball front lines that Dallas can throw out there, Daniel Gafford even brings some size to the table. So it's going to be a big challenge for them in round two, but they've played really well in the first round. And again, the defensive end is where I've been most impressed by them. All right, guys, that is all I have for tonight. As always, I sincerely appreciate you guys for supporting the show. Quick breakdown for tomorrow. The plan as of right now is we're going after Clippers Mavs, and that's just going to be uploaded to YouTube. That won't be live. And then Monday morning, we have the Nerd Sesh guys coming on the show, and we're going to bounce around the entire first round and go through and hear what Carson and Logan have to say about everything. Again, I appreciate you guys for rocking with me. I will see you tomorrow.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.